20 years ago this month, everything changed. Columbine, a high school in Colorado, was under attack by two students. Some might not be able to listen now to what the country was hearing then as the siege was broadcast live for hours, first responders helpless outside because the protocol then was to wait for a SWAT team. As calls poured into 911, like this one from a teacher in the library bloodied by broken glass, begging kids to get down.
And the school is in a panic, and I'm in the library. I've got students down under the table, kids! Heads under the table!
Columbine wasn't the first shooting in the U.S., but it was the worst at the time. 13, including Coach Dave Sanders, would die, 10 in that library. Over 20 were wounded. Protocols were changed. Now first responders are told, get in as fast as you can. But as we heard yesterday from Frank DeAngelis, those who survived that day, like that teacher in the library, can still be emotionally devastated 20 years on. Frank's new memoir, his first, is called They Called Me Mr. D. He'd been a teacher at Columbine since 1979, then the beloved principal, who'd be rolled into an assembly playing a piano, singing like Barry Manilow. He now travels the country trying to help other schools after shootings. He knew the parent from Sandy Hook who recently killed himself and worries about who's next. We'll have yesterday's conversation with Principal Frank DeAngelis at hereandnow.org. A warning, today's will also be tender, maybe triggers for some. We began with April 20th, 1999. Do you mind if we go back to that day?
No, that's okay. Fine.
Well, you usually covered the lunch period to be closer to the kids, but you were in your office, and then at 11:19, the shots rang out. You run towards them.
And the first thing that crossed my mind is this has to be a senior prank. This cannot be happening. And my worst nightmare became a reality because I encountered the gunman. Everything just kind of slowed down, not sure what I was going to do. What was it going to feel like to have bullets pierce my body? Now, through counseling, through some type of techniques, I learned why I continued to go towards that gunman, because I had about 25 girls that were coming out of the locker room to go to a physical education class.
Well, you were able to herd those 20 or so girls toward a storage closet and incredibly pull the right key out to open the door. I mean, one more, you know, just a couple more seconds and you all could have been shot.
And that key story, because it was a key of 35, it was in the middle of these keys. And if I wasn't able to find that key on the first try, who knows, I probably would not be doing this interview. But the thing that adds to the survivor's guilt is I found out later through police reports that Dave Sanders, again, he was my mentor. If he would have stayed in the faculty lounge, I would have died that day because what happened is he ran up the staircase, and as he's running down to warn kids, the gunman was coming towards me, and he catches glimpse of Dave, so he stops momentarily to turn around, and unfortunately, he shoots Dave through the back of the head, and that moment that caused the gunman to slow down as he was coming towards me and the girls probably saved our lives.
What's happening to you when you're telling me this?
You know, right now, I have some butterflies. When I tell the key story, I get chills, and I think of those girls, you know, screaming. I hear the gunshots. I remember that door pulling on it. But then what I have to do, and I learned this through my counselor, is I have to replay the things differently. You know, I have to think back to Dave Sanders and the time we spent together teaching and coaching, and these girls, they send me pictures now of their daughters or sons, and they said, Mr. D, I am so grateful you found that key. If not, I wouldn't have this beautiful family.
Well, then it continues. You have to start the school up again. You know, you're learning as you go, and you realize you can't serve Chinese food because it was what kids were eating in the cafeteria when the shooting started. You can't show war videos.
I mean, the first time we did fire drill, I had to change that sound because many of the kids and staff members were trapped in the building for over 3 hours.
Right.
Students could not wear camouflage because some of the law enforcement that came in to free up the kids were wearing camouflage. These are things we were never ready for. And I had the first dose of post-traumatic stress disorder, what it was like when our parents decided to put up an archway of balloons when we returned to go to school. we didn't think anything of it until the balloon started popping. And all of a sudden, you see these kids diving on the ground. And that's when I said, oh, my gosh, it's going to be a tough road ahead.
Yeah, and it was.
There's a couple of things that really have improved greatly. We have proven that locked classroom doors are a key to protecting students and staff. These perpetrators realize that the event is going to be over within 10 minutes because of the change in protocol. There's going to be responding officers. So if they come onto a classroom and that door is locked, they're going to move on to what they consider a soft target. One of the other things that Colorado, we're so fortunate, we have a program called Safe to Tell. And it's a 24/7 anonymous tip line at Parkland. You know, the killer was broadcasting what he was going to do. And so that 24/7 hotline is outstanding. And, you know, people say, well, Frank, we continue to hear about these shootings. But how many have been stopped because of things we have in place today that we didn't have in place back in 1999?
Well, one hopes more can be stopped. But what about guns? You're against a large ban, but you'd like to see some restrictions. The ease with which the two shooters were able to get guns it's nauseating. They had a friend, 18. She went to a gun show with them. You know, they said, wait, you're 18. We can't do this because we're not old enough. So she bought them the guns. She said later she didn't have to fill out anything. There was no background check. There was not even a receipt. First of all, I can't imagine what her life is like, knowing that she provided guns. But how was she able to do that? Shouldn't that be changed?
And that's the question I get asked, especially last year after Parkland, politicians coming out and saying, if we have tougher gun laws, there is never going to be another school shooting. And that's where I disagree. I mean, loopholes, the young lady that you're speaking of, she said if they would have made it more difficult, because at the time, independent gun dealers did not have to do background checks. Well, since that time, there have been gun laws in place.
In Colorado, yes, but go ahead.
What I question is when people say that's the only thing that's allowing these to happen, because I think back to Columbine, the two gunmen, in addition to getting the guns from the young lady, they purchased some guns illegally that were used in the killing.
Sure. Young people went to prison for selling them.
Exactly.
To them. Yeah.
We also have to look at students that may be struggling. It saddens me when school districts are cutting back on mental health and then the role that social media is playing in these kids' lives. Now you take each piece of this puzzle, you put it together, and we have a chance of stopping these massacres from occurring.
Yeah. Frank DeAngelis, there's so much more. Oprah taped a show with you. You were very unhappy because it concentrated on the killers and you wanted to concentrate on the kids. And so she called you and said, I won't run it. Well, look at that. I mean, so many moments of grace and moments of horror. But you say every single day you recite their names?
Every morning. Cassie Bernal, Stephen Curnow, Corey DePooter, Kelly Fleming, Matt Kechter, Daniel Mauser, Danny Rohrbaugh, Rachel Scott, Isaiah Scholes, John Tomlin, Lauren Townsend, Kyle Velasquez, and Dave Sanders. Every morning I wake up, the first thing when I get out of bed is I recite, you know, my beloved 13. If I reached out to people, they could name the names of the two perpetrators, but they would have a hard time naming the names of the victims. And I made a promise that I'm never going to let those 13 die in vain.
I think we'll leave it at that. I don't know how you do it.
Well, I'm pretty emotional. I make the joke that I get emotional at the grand opening of a Walmart. And so, I mean, I cry when I present. Comes back, I share a story about Sean Graves. When Sean Graves was paralyzed, Sean Graves and Patrick Ireland and Anne-Marie Hall-Coulter and Richard Castaldo, they gave me hope. There was a chance that Sean would never walk again. I said, Sean, I'm looking so forward to when you graduate and me handing your diploma. You know, he worked hard. He passed all of his classes, but he did not walk until that day. About 10,000 people there, and they announce his name. And all of a sudden, Sean puts his hand up, gets out of the wheelchair, and walks over to get his diploma. And he said, Mr. D, I'm here to get my diploma. Thanks for never giving up on me. Patrick Ireland, the boy in the window,
The boy in the window, he jumped out of the window, bloodied from the library, just to try to survive. First responders were below him.
Yes, and he could not even put three words together to make a sentence. Less than 9 months later, he graduated number one in his class valedictorian. In the class of 2002, he went on to CSU, graduating top 10%. The kid is just phenomenal, and I can remember he invited me to his wedding. Kenny Kosak, who is the director at Craig Hospital, tapped me on the shoulder. I turn around, he's crying, I'm crying, and he said, did you ever think that you would see Patrick Ireland walking down the aisle to marry that beautiful woman? Patrick has two daughters and a son, and he's my financial advisor, and I am so happy Patrick's alive.
Yeah. That's Frank DeAngelis. His memoir is They Call Me Mr. D, the story of Columbine's heart, resilience, and recovery. Frank, thanks so much for talking to us about it.
Thank you. And when I have those conversations with, Ty Thompson, the principal from Parkland, and Rachel Brendel from Santa Fe, I said, don't ever give up hope, because where we were 19 years ago, and I look to where we are right now, there is hope, so don't ever give up. And I said, I'm not going away. I'm going to be with you every step of the way.